Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
What Gershwin said in under 100 words, Beyoncé now says in nearly 500 words. When we fell in love, it was the summertime. When heaven shined on us, it was the sun. Yes, these days pop songs are getting a lot more verbose. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Consider this. Top 10 songs back in the 60s had an average of 176 words. Last year, that number climbed to 436, and one week in early February, the majority of top 10 songs crossed the 500-word mark. In a moment, we'll talk to one veteran of the 60s instrumental surf rock movement who was recently inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And later still, we'll speak with Lawston Harris, a jazz vocalist who talks about the lyrically concise tradition of the Great American Songbook. But we begin with William Weir, a writer in New Haven whose recent article in Slate is called Words, 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 Are Excessive Lyrics Ruining Pop Music? Bill, welcome to Soundcheck.
Hi, John.
So let me throw your title back at you. Are excessive lyrics ruining pop music?
I don't know if they're ruining pop music, but the amount of words, it does seem to be strangling the songs a little bit.
Well, I mean, you don't think of top 40 pop as a particularly literary endeavor. Where are all the words coming from?
That's true. I mean, that's one thing. I'll give a pass to guys like, you know, Wu-Tang Clan or Eminem or you know folks who are telling stories. These guys are rocking tours. But say take Kiss Kiss by T-Pain and Chris Brown. They're not telling a story, but they are using many words. In this case, 742.
Bill, were you sitting at home counting all these words?
I was. It took days. I became sort of like the Rain Man of lyrics. When a song would come on the radio, I would say, oh, that's 432 words to whoever was in earshot. The response was usually, will you please stop doing that?
Why were you doing this in the first place?
Well, I had this kind of a goofy idea that I was going to do a story about the tradition of omniscient narrators in pop music. So I looked at the lyrics for I Can See for Miles by The Who. Mm-hmm. I was struck by how sparse the lyrics looked on the sheet compared to the lyrics that I see today. And then I sort of threw out that idea and pursued this.
Well, now, some of the names that you mentioned, you know, people like Eminem, I mean, rap is built on words. Isn't that where a lot of this is coming from?
My first theory was that hip-hop was a huge influence on this. It does have an effect, but not as much as I originally thought. Because, I mean, from the 50s to the 60s, it increased by about 10% in my accounts. And then from the 60s to the 70s, it jumped from like to 38%. And Rapper's Delight, the first mainstream rap song, that didn't come out until 1979. Okay. So word inflation had begun long before hip-hop.
All right, now you mentioned this song by Chris Brown and T-Pain. They're a number one hit, Kiss Kiss, at 742 words. I mean, I actually have the lyrics here, and it runs to three pages typed. It is pretty impressive. Let's hear a little bit of the song In Action from Chris Brown and T-Pain. The song is Kiss Kiss, Chris Brown and T-Pain, number one hit. 742 words, we're told. William Weir, the New Haven-based writer, joining us from the studios of Yale University. His recent article in Slate is called Words, 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 Are Excessive Lyrics Ruining Pop Music? And what do you think? Are you actually a fan of lyrics? Do you enjoy the wordplay and songs that tell stories? Give us a call at 212-264-7483. That's 212-264-7483. 7483, or leave a comment on the Soundcheck page of our website, WNYC.org. Bill, you mentioned that from the 60s to the 70s, you found a big jump in the amount of words in the songs that were kind of at the top of the charts there. Does that mean you actually went back through music history all the way to the 50s, again, counting words in all of these songs?
I did. I got a subscription to Billboard specifically so I could get the database of the charts that I had of the top 10 songs. And you know,
did you get out much, Bill?
Not for the past couple months.
My goodness. So why do you think this big jump happened between the 60s and the 70s particularly?
Well, my first thought was song length. I mean, obviously songs you know got longer from the in the 70s. But it turned out that the correlation wasn't, it did, again, it had an effect, but not quite the correlation I thought it would have. Freebird, Stairway to Heaven, Inagata De Vita, you know, songs that we think of as long songs, you know, they really didn't have that many more words.
No, Inagata De Vita has very few things that could pass as words.
True, yeah.
But now, when you're talking about count, Bill, I mean, we've already gotten several comments on our website from people who are asking essentially the same question, which is, are we counting, like with Kiss Kiss, are you counting every kiss? Or is the first time it appears, are those 742 unique words, or are those 742 total words, of which 100 might be kiss?
I counted total words, so including repeated verses. For instance, White Christmas is actually 54 words, but I count it as 108 because Bing Crosby sings it twice.
Okay. is this about marketability? Is that why we don't find instrumental rock or pop music that much anymore?
A lot of it is marketability, because I mean, as much as they spend on advertising, much of what we hear from music is through word of mouth. And if you heard a song and you didn't know the name of it, and you went into a record store and you said to the record clerk, I heard this song. It goes, "My humps, my humps, my humps, my humps." The record clerk will say, "Oh, that's My Humps by the Black Eyed Peas."
Right.
But if you heard, say, another song by Explosions in the Sky, a instrumental band from Texas, and you tried describing it to them, it's a jangly guitar with another heavy guitar over it,
and it's 20 minutes long.
Right. Yeah. I mean, good luck trying to find anyone who knows what you're talking about.
Well, that's I guess there's a lot of different ways to look at this. One is from a cultural standpoint. The other is from a scientific standpoint. There have been studies about how people respond differently to vocal music as opposed to instrumental music. I mean, that's something that we've heard in, the classical music, the world of classical music radio for many, many years, that, you don't play opera, you don't play vocal music because that requires a different sort of listening from your audience. Does that sort of thing hold true here as well?
I did look into the science of it. The study that most pertained to what I was looking into came out of the American University. They played instrumental versions of songs with words to the subjects, and then they also played the songs with the words. And through surveys and such, they determined that the melodies actually had a little more of an effect emotionally than the words did. And sometimes the words actually deadened the emotional effect.
Wow. All right. So that's pretty interesting. We're talking about, quantity and quality of words in contemporary pop music with William Weir, who has written about this recently for Slate.com. And we're also talking about the disappearance of wordless pop, of instrumentals, like this classic from The Ventures. Walk, Don't Run was a big hit for The Ventures, and joining us now on Soundcheck is one of the legends of rock's instrumental movement. Don Wilson is one of the founding members of The Ventures. They sold an estimated 100 million records with hits like Walk Don't Run and Hawaii 5-0. Earlier this month, they were inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And Don, congratulations and welcome to Soundcheck.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you.
Now, the Ventures actually did release one vocal single called Cookies and Coke before deciding to become an instrumental group. What was behind that decision?
Well, actually, my mom wrote that song, and she was really, if you'll pardon the pun, really instrumental in our early career to take our whatever we recorded around to radio stations like Walk Don't Run, and got turned down many times, by the way. Even sent it down to Liberty Records in Los Angeles that was Dalton distributor, and we were on Dalton Records.
And they just thought, there's no words here. We're not going to do
no,
this.
No, that's not a hit. And The guy that had Dalton Records, he said, I'll pay for whatever it doesn't, whatever it loses. And it went on to be a number two hit in the nation.
So. Right. So there was a market for instrumental, for wordless pop at some point, and it was a really strong market. You guys did extremely well here in the States. Do you agree with Bill's point? Are there too many words in pop music today?
Well, you know, I don't really listen that much, so, you know, I don't hardly listen at all to new music. I don't know why. I mean, there's some things that are okay, but I don't know. I think that, you know, in the 50s and the 60s, and as like William Weir said, that, you know, these things repeated. Bridges, I mean, choruses and verses were repeated, and there just wasn't that many. If you count them twice, there's still not that many compared to what's going on today. Yeah, I agree with that.
Bill,
and if I were him, I wouldn't ever want to hear those songs again for what he had to go through to write every word down in those songs and sometimes not understanding them. Well, I don't know how he researched when it's some words he doesn't understand. Maybe he had to slow it down where it went.
Well, these days you can get all that stuff off the internet.
I had to do that sometimes. I didn't understand the words, you know, and we wanted to do as we do a couple of vocals. I had a contract at one time with Imperial Records as a vocalist. So in our show we do a few vocals just to break up the instrumentals.
Okay. So even though you have made your reputation as an instrumentalist, as a guitarist, in fact, with the
right.
Ventures, it's not that you were opposed to singing or to words. Bill, let me come back to you. I mean, you know, Don mentions the bridge and stuff like that. I mean, have we lost those little instrumental moments in pop music because of the words, the crowding out of the instrumentalists?
To some extent, we have. You know, to go back to Kiss, Kiss, the T-Pain, Chris Brown song, there are exactly 2 seconds at the very beginning of the song before the vocals come in. And from that point on, maybe excepting imperceptible microseconds, there's vocals for the entire song right to the very end.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas you used to have these sort of instrumental phrasings that would let the song breathe. But these guys, they just don't let up. I mean, they don't step away from the microphone at all.
All right, let's see what some of our Soundcheck listeners have to say, and we'll begin here in Manhattan with Corey. Corey, welcome to the program.
Hi.
What do you think about it? I mean, quantity, quality of words?
Well, you know, I mean, if you go back to the 50s and 60s, the Brill Building days, I mean, people were just writing songs. They were just having a good time, and they were trying to make a living and, you know, entertain people. Now everybody's gotten to be artists, and they're trying to get so serious about it that obviously being this pretentious, they've got to keep talking. I mean, they just can't stop.
So you think that's what's behind the 700 words that T-Pain and Chris Brown use in Kiss Kiss? That's hot. That's art.
Well, they think it is,
okay.
And they, you know, and they've just got to keep going, you know, because they got so much to, you know, share with humanity that they can't stop.
Right. All right. Thanks, Corey, for getting us started. Let's take another call from Monroe Township, New Jersey. Is it Michaela? Am I getting the name
it's
right?
It's actually Michael.
Michael, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Sorry. Not even the right gender there. So, I mean, what do you think?
Well, I think it's a lot of the question of timelessness. When you think about the Beatles and, you know, a lot of the doo-wop and back in those days, it's still relevant today because of it just seems like timeless lyrics. When you look at the Chris Brown song, I don't think people will be referencing it in pop culture in the next few years, whereas take a look at Amy Winehouse's Rehab. That was a huge smash global, and I think it's because of the simplicity and I feel like that song is going to be timeless because of just how simple the lyrics are.
Bill, did you get a chance to count up the words in Amy Winehouse's big hit from last year?
I don't think I did, but my guess is that it probably wouldn't be that much different from, you know, some of the classic songs.
So do you agree with Michael that it has that kind of timeless, you know, lyrical structure to it?
Well, I do think that the fewer words you use, the more chance that it's going to be universal.
All right, but I asked you before why there was such a, you know, you found a big hike in words between the 60s and 70s. What about the effect of someone like Bob Dylan in the mid-60s?
Yeah, Bob Dylan has a, you know, huge impact on that. In fact, I kind of single him out as the one person most responsible for this. It was in 1963 that you had Wipeout by the Safaris and Memphis by Lonnie Mack. And, I mean, it looked, you know, like a great time for instrumentals. Then came Bob
that
Dylan and his album.
What was that, Don?
That lyric, Wipeout.
Yeah.
Wipeout. There's seven words right there.
This is true.
If you want to be technical, I don't know.
But that same year, you had the freewheeling Bob Dylan, and he came out with, you know, the Hard Rain's Gonna Fall, which had about 550 words, a huge amount of words for the time, and people loved it, critics loved it, and I think since then they kind of got the ball rolling.
And Don, I mean, from your standpoint with The Ventures, you know, yep, known as an instrumental pop band at that time, did you see Dylan as, you know, the enemy somehow? I mean, did that hurt the type of music you guys were doing?
No, I don't think anything interferes with our instrumentals. I don't care how many words they put in or don't or whatever. An instrumental is quite different than anything else, obviously. It doesn't have any words. So, no, I don't think that had any effect on what we recorded or what we sold or anything. No.
Well, then why do you think we haven't seen much instrumental pop music in recent decades? Where's it gone?
I don't know. I don't know what happened. I know that when we first started, it was the guitar instrumental was fairly unique. And I think, you know, Les Paul, of course, mm-hmm, had some hits. And, of course, a lot of them were vocal. Some of them were not, with Mary Ford. But and then Duane Eddy came along, and his were strictly instrumental. And then he was a couple of years before us. As a matter of fact, he was more or less my mentor when we first started. His stuff was easy to learn, but yet effective. He mm-hmm had a certain sound, and you know, we kind of that's the way I started playing his songs. And then getting in with my partner, Bob Bogle, we started coming up with our own original stuff.
Right. And since it was instrumental, you didn't have a language problem. And so you could go to Europe and Japan and not, yeah, have to worry about, you know, your audience not understanding where you were coming from. In fact, it seems like Japan has been extraordinarily good to you guys over the years. Going there, you know, over the course of these recent decades. Are you still performing in Japan these days?
Yeah, we go 3 weeks in the winter and 3 months in the summer. We've been doing that since 1962.
Wow.
If you can believe that. We have had 20, you know, unfortunately, what happens in Japan stays in Japan. It's like Las Vegas, you know.
Well, let's hear.
We've had 20 number one hits in Japan and sold between 40 and 50 million records in Japan alone.
In Japan alone,
went
wow
over there. There wasn't even an electric guitar, electric bass guitar in the country.
When
so
you first
we
went there.
The
yeah, that's very different now. We're speaking with Don Wilson from The Ventures and also with author William Weir. And this is The Ventures, live in Japan in 1965. Surf Rider Sputnik from The Ventures, live in Japan, 1965. Don Wilson of The Ventures. with us on the line from Washington State, and they, as he said, go back to Japan quite a lot. No language problem. The instrumental music still going strong there. Not so much here in the States, where, as our other guest, William Weir, has written for Slate, it seems to be all about words, and lots of them. Let's take another caller, Frank, joining us from Staten Island. Frank, too many words?
I'm always the prog rock guy. Listen, when I listen to really good, like a good 20-minute song of progressive rock, it's expected to have a lot of lyrics because it's telling a great story. Now, but, you know, you don't want 500 words in a 3-minute or 4-minute song. They got to let up. It's got to have the breathing room. Now, you mentioned Dylan before. What about Masters of War? It's a long song telling
right.
that long story. A lot of words. But then I'll give you a better one. The Entertainer by Billy Joel tells a great story in a very tight format. It has the verses and the bridges, and it works very, very well. You know, but the songs today, they don't let up.
Do you mean Piano Man? Sing us a song.
Piano Man has a great story, too, and it's called I Am the Entertainer.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Where I am.
Right. Right. All right.
I'm sorry. I'm the angry young man. Angry young. That's the one I was thinking of.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Frank. There is a kind of a corollary question to what Frank was just saying. Bill, the idea of telling a story. I mean, you know, in the 13th and 14th century, you know, these Scottish murder ballads went on forever. There were a lot of words. I mean, is this a kind of a cyclical thing?
Well, the story. Notion is true. It's I mean, you're right. The ballads did go on forever, and they told stories. And likewise, you know, the wordiest song I could find of all the songs that I looked at was Alice's Restaurant, which is about 2,633 words
and about 18 or 19 minutes long.
Right. The second wordiest was Paradise by the Dashboard Light, which is about half that.
By Meatloaf?
Yeah. that includes a Scooters play-by-play.
Uh-huh. Okay.
The songs that do tell stories, they will, by necessity, you know, go on with a lot of words.
All right. I have a final question for you, and it comes from one of our listeners. Tricia writes, is there any corollary between the drop in words in general in U.S. society, she writes, we are now very visual, plays, magazine articles, movies, etc., versus the increase in lyrics in music?
That's a good... I didn't look at that. You could say that words have shifted. Maybe we're using words more in email and text messaging than we were in face-to-face conversations. And maybe it's also playing out in lyrics. Who knows?
Right, I guess there's another article in there somewhere.
Yeah.
We've been speaking with William Weir, based in New Haven. He wrote the article in Slate called Words, 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 Are Excessive Lyrics Ruining Pop Music? And with Don Wilson, guitarist and co-founder of the great instrumental rock band, they didn't use words at all, usually, The Ventures, now in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And Don, once again, congratulations to you. And gentlemen, to both of you, thanks for being with us on Soundcheck today.
Thank you very much.
Another of the great rock instrumentals, Booker T and the MGs with Green Onions. And coming up next, singer and pianist Lawston Harris knows a thing or two about the economy of words. He joins us to look at songs made famous by the smooth crooners of the Rat Pack. And later, Thomas Edison may be the father of recorded sound, but find out who the grandfather might be later on Soundcheck.
What chemical forces flow from lover to lover? How little we understand what touches off that tingle.